When you need expert help and advice on issues affecting your business, NFU Cymru, we're here for you.
Want to get to know the people who produce the food that you eat? This is the place. Step this way and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming.
Everybody, and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming episode 164. I'm your host, Will Evans, and tonight I am heading all the way to Waikato in New Zealand to talk to dairy farmer Mark Lloyd-Jones. Mark, how are you?
Well, how are you?
Good. Yeah, very, good. Very well. Mark, how does it feel to be living in a country where your government has actually handled the COVID situation well? Because it's hard to believe that life has returned to relative normality there whilst we are still in the midst of a months-long lockdown here.
Yeah. Do you know what? It feels pretty good to live in. I feel really privileged to be living the life we are, you know, and, you know, you join the dots of life, and I wouldn't have pictured ourselves out here and being so lucky, you yeah. know, in just one choice that we've made in life. So really, really, really lucky. But, not to form too much political things on here. Jacinda from Labour has done a good job. As good as I can talk about it.
Listen,
capitalist coming out of me straight away. Look,
listeners will have already discerned from both your name and your accent that you are not a native New Zealander. Where are you from?
I'm actually from Capagarmon in Bitters of Coed, just above the. Most people have heard of Bitters of Coed if they've been to Snowdonia. So yeah. From there originally, went to school in Chiaroost and ag college in Chisfasi. In summary, kind of that was my forming years or whatever you want to call them.
We went where we had a. I think it was November when the lockdown was slightly eased in Wales. We could. Travel. So my wife and I, in a desperate effort to get away from our wonderful children, we borrowed a camper van for a weekend, and we went up to Snowdonia then, and we went we called in Betus on the way, but it was absolutely chucking it down all weekend, like torrential sideways rain. So I bet you don't miss that part of Wales, do you?
Do you know what? That's actually a tagline I use over here. When it pisses down with rain, I'm like, you Kiwis don't know you're born, are you selling this shit?
yeah, because where we are, we're sort of on the Welsh border near Wrexham, and all that rain from Snowdonia comes down to us, and we were down there. When we were up there, there was like water running off every surface like it does up there. And I just thought, oh, God, all by the time I get home, all this is going to be all over our fields. But anyway, look, we won't talk for an hour about the Welsh weather, though I'm sure we could. Were you born on a farm then up there?
Nah. My parents split up when I was about 3 or 4 years old. My old man's a miner from Blaenafastiniog.
Okay.
My mother works in housing and stuff like that for domestic violence relationships and stuff like that. So she's always worked there. And then my mother remarried. No, didn't remarry. Stepdad kind of lived in Capagarmon.
Okay.
So I was brought up basically in that rural upbringing with my stepfather and mother in Capagarmon we had a 10-acre lifestyle block, I was going to say, but you guys call it small holding over there. Changed my lingo already. So always been, there's been farmers renting our land, and I used to help them with sheep and stuff on the land, and cattle and moving cattle, and our neighbours were dairy farmers. And so ever since then, I've always been around livestock, I guess.
Yeah.
From a young age, yeah.
Yeah. So did you decide then when you were doing all that, that that's what you want to do as a career, you wanted to be a farmer?
Yeah, one vivid memory I do actually have, and it's quite a funny story, actually. I remember, I'm not sure if I cried. I probably did cry, but but when I was about 6 or 7 years old, I remember my stepdad saying that his father was a, what's the English word for gouache? He was like a farm hand.
Yeah, on okay.
The farm. After the war, and was offered the farm. And I remember, like, oh, wow, if all these dots would have joined in life, I could have been living on that farm. And I was, like, really sad that that hadn't happened. So that played something of my mind all the way through my life. Like, oh, I must want a farm, but probably quite disillusioned along a lot of the journey around how to get into farming and stuff like that.
Yeah, okay. So what was your... what was your early route into farming? When did you do your first sort of proper farm work?
Oh, what age would I probably would have been going wrapping wool and all that kind of stuff from 11, 12 years old, just general farm work. And then once I got competent on machinery, I would have been mucking out and all that stuff from... yeah, from a real young age. I did a lot of work on right on the floor of Conway Valley, Kilkenny's farm, in between Kenroast and Betros there. So, yeah, really good friends of the family. And I've got a lot to owe them about what I learned in them early years about livestock and farming in general and stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay. So how did you end up doing fencing contracting work? I suppose it's a fairly good sidestep, I guess, from what you were doing on the farm.
Yeah, well, my life revolved around the Nance Conway Rugby Club from a very young age.
Yeah, okay.
So all my youth was spent with it, wanting to play rugby or training for rugby or doing something with rugby. And then Elgar Mitkaff was the club captain when I was younger, and he had a fencing contracting company. And did the fencing,
Okay.
That was tough yakka in Snowdonia. You know, there'd be a lot of places that you couldn't get there. So, you know, we'd have an old 40-kilo gas bottle kind of thing, cut in half, and we used to call her the Big Bird, and she'd have about 25 mil, 30 mil of plate on top, and you'd be one on each end whacking straight in a post.
Gee whiz. Okay.
Pitching down with rain in the middle of Snowdonia, putting fences up. Yeah, that was tough yakker, and it taught me a lot about hard work the right attitude towards hard work. Elka Metcalf was a hell of a boss. He led by example.
Yeah.
He could go all day.
Yeah. So if you've got any fencing contractors and people who do fencing always have like their own unique style, or they have tips and tricks or things that they do, have you got any tips and tricks from those days for people who do a bit of fencing?
Well, I guess I like the old mortise and tenon stay. I do like a bit of an indent in the strainer at the end so that the posts don't twist. A bit of that That's probably a beauty of a stay. If you get that right, it's and the wiring, finishing the wiring at the end. Wow.
Okay. So when did you, I suppose you would have been a pretty young guy in those days, doing fencing contracting, doing some farming. When did you sort of start to think, how am I going to follow a route into farming in my own right?
Yeah. I had to think back. I came out to New Zealand in 2007, I remember. And my friend was over here playing rugby for the local rugby club here. The two, I think the two chairmen, so Nance Conroy, the chairman, and Southern United chairman, okay, were friends from the 1987 Rugby World Cup.
Ah,
and
yeah,
that was okay, the link between the rugby club and this Tokoroa town.
Okay.
So Elgan, my mate, came here in 2007. We travelled here, and he was dairy farming here. So that was my first exposure to kind of New Zealand dairying as such. Seeing the system and stuff like that. Previous to that, David Wynne-Finch had done that conversion in the Huon Peninsula a couple of years previous to that. And yeah, that was probably the initial thought about dairying, okay, even though I met Nia at the time and her family were dairying farming. I was like, I do not want to be doing this. And I don't know why I probably looked at it as a monotonous life for some reason, and probably my mind wasn't open to things, I guess. I'm quite narrow-minded back in them days, I'd say.
Mm. So when you first went out to New Zealand then and did a bit of work there, did you think at that time, yeah, I could happily live here? Did you see yourself moving there, or at that age, were you too young to be thinking in that way?
No, that 2007 visit, we had a cracker of a time. I think we were here for 2 or 3 months or something initially.
Yeah,
travelled the whole width and breadth of New Zealand. We had a hell of a good time. And I was like, oh, I love this lifestyle.
Yeah.
So, like, in 2009, 4 of us travelled across the United States on Route 66 and then ended up in New Zealand again. That was the plan. And then I stayed on in 2009 for 2 years working on dairy farms. And that's where I kind of fell in love with the grazing system and milking cows and the lifestyle that went with it, and probably the weather over here helped a little bit. So yeah, that was like the aha moment, I guess you'd call it, in 2 years, 2009 to 2011. The plan was actually to stay for the Rugby World Cup, but my visa finished about 2 months before the World Cup, so I actually ended up back in Wales that year.
My sister and brother-in-law went out for that World Cup, actually. I still haven't got over that semi-final, but anyway. It's my worst sporting memory, I think. Anyway, but you moved back to the UK and end up in Scotland. How did you end up?
Yeah.
There?
So after the Penhuen conversion that David Wynne-Finch and Hirst Williams had done, they'd done one in Pentrefwylas as well.
Yeah.
I was quite intrigued. Oh, so it's happening over here kind of thing. And I spoke to Hirst, and he had a friend of a friend doing a conversion up in Scotland, Brendan Muldowney. He was doing a Nuffield a couple of years before, and I think it was one of the Nuffield mates who was converting up there. So put me in touch with Brendan Muldowney over there in Dumfries, and got the job kind of managing that conversion, or not managing the herd on the conversion farm as such. That was really good. Yeah, it was good to get away from North Wales. I could have probably fell off the horse and got back into them rugby days and drinking shit. So that was pretty important to focus on career at that point, I'd say.
Yeah.
What was that? 2012. What would they have been? Yeah, 24. Yeah.
So at that point, did you start to see a long-term future in dairying? That was where you were
going
to be.
That was where we were going, yeah.
Okay.
And Muldowney was a hell of a good guy. Luck, again, you know, working for someone excellent at what they do. Mm. Brendan was a really good guy, really good mentor. I keep in touch with him now and everything around business and stuff like that. He was a banking manager in Ireland for AIB banking.
Okay.
Very, very switched on, focused farmer. Left the bank and wanted to go dairy farming.
Okay.
And, yeah, really lucky to have been exposed to him. And that probably formed the way I think now, I guess, that yeah. broad thinking and everything like that. Yeah.
Okay.
It was really, really good 2 years up there.
Yeah. So did you start to, I mean, at the back of your mind when you were up there, were you still sort of hoping to get back to New Zealand? Was that start of the plan, or was, or did just an opportunity come up and you decided to take it?
That was an opportunity in itself. And I always knew that New Zealand would be there.
Yeah.
But seeing that there was a few conversions happening and stuff like that was appealing to me.
Mm.
But within that, I knew I didn't have enough money at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I probably had a big fat donut in the bank after all my traveling and drinking up to that point. So,
yeah.
I was like, these conversions are happening and I haven't got the capital.
Mm.
So the middle of the progression ladder, I guess, was always appealing over here in New Zealand, knowing that there was
yeah.
management, country milking, and share milking to get to that farm ownership
yeah.
kind of thing.
When
yeah.
you and Nia got married that year, was that a sort of bit of a catalyst for going as well? Did you think, well, look, now we've got married, we're going to probably have kids, you know, let's go now? Now is the time, or?
No, so like after them 2 years in Scotland, 2012 to 2014, we moved back down to Wales to North Wales for 2 years.
Okay.
And we were about a mile away from Nia's parents' farm, and we contract milked a conversion farm, Hendrickson and mine. A lot of people will be listening. That's where Sam Pearson is now, kind of
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That farm there, we worked there for 2 years, and then come 2016 we were ready to do something. After 2 years we were like, oh yeah, we need a slice of pie somewhere, kind of. Four years of converting farms, you know, all the mm-hmm. way from 2012 to 2016 had probably taken its toll on me.
Mm-hmm.
I was working bloody hard, and
oh, bear.
In them forming years of conversions, there's a lot of things that go wrong. So probably constantly been firefighting for 4 years.
Yeah.
And it probably came to a bit of fatigue and probably a little bit of a mental episode. I wouldn't say depression, but I knew there was something mm. going on, that I was fatigued and something not quite right. And reading the Dairy Exporter all the time, seeing the pictures of cows in New Zealand, I was like, oh, I've got to get back somehow. I've got to make this happen. So started going online and trying for jobs in 2016 and came across an operations manager job. So, like, I was trying to maximise what I could do. I wasn't a resident in New Zealand, but what would be the highest paying role that I could get without being resident. So ops yeah. manager is kind of a, so I flew over by myself, I think in June or something of 2016, just to see the farm. He paid for me to come out and did like 3 weeks work, and that was like, oh, do you want the job? Love the farm down in Southland. And I was like, yeah, perfect. So okay. that was two farms, 1,000 cows, and just operating a couple of teams on the farm. Two
yeah.
farms kind of thing. So that was really good, yeah. To get that job, I was like, Jesus. Yeah.
Fantastic. So we've all got sort of quite used to people making that move to Australia or New Zealand. And, you know, I've spoke to a lot of people on the podcast who've done that. You know, most of us know someone who's done it. But it is a big deal moving so far to the other side of the world. What's that experience like emotionally? Can you describe it?
Yeah. Like, saying this now, it feels definitely really weird. But like, we thought that the world was getting smaller, technology, planes are getting bigger.
Yeah.
It's 24 hours on a plane. If, you know, if we have a family member or something goes sick or something happens, we're like, boom, jump on a plane. As long as we've got like a bit of contingency dollars, you know, in our bank, we can jump on a plane, job done.
Mm.
And then I guess when I say that today, the world feels really big. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I know what you mean. Yeah.
It's probably created a little homesickness, this COVID, that we know that we can't have family here.
Mm.
But during that time, like, it was a big deal for Nia, I know, leaving her family so far away and friends and I was a big deal. But for me, it wasn't. I knew I was doing the right thing for me.
Mm.
And to be fair to Nia, to have the courage to follow and stuff like that and agree that we'd go that, that's been a blessing.
Mm. Yeah. Are there the same opportunities for new entrants in New Zealand now as there were then? You know, it's always been sort of held up as, you know, the place to go if you want to, if you're an ambitious young person and you want to get into farming. Perhaps you haven't got a farm of your own, but there's, the, you know, if you work hard and you've got half a brain, there's a future there for you. You know, is that still the same now as it always was, or has it got harder?
It's definitely got harder with compliance and stuff like that coming against us.
Mm.
But that's worldwide, I guess, these days, what we're fighting. But what I would say is probably the middle of the ladder is a lot more established with these contract milking and share milking opportunities. And that has always been the goal for us, is to get that middle of the ladder right so that our growth is actually excelled a little bit, whereas if we would have stayed in North Wales, maybe, and converted a farm and maybe bought 10% of a 300 cow herd.
Yeah.
We've got 30 cows and we'd be expected to stay there for 5 years and maybe doing 6 or 7% return. And yeah. So we were always wanting to speed up our growth a little bit, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. So how does, For people listening who might not be farmers, or maybe they're in other sectors and they don't know much about dairy farming, just give us a brief explanation of how the share milking system or process works in New Zealand. You know, how do you get that foothold initially?
Yeah, so I guess it all comes to track record and knowledge and experience. So you start farm assistant, herd manager, farm manager, and all those are employee roles. And then you get up to contract milking, which is a fixed fee of the milk check. So like $6 payout or $7, it's actually $7.20 now. A dollar or $1.50 or whatever the scale, like, so we're milking 1,000 cows here, so our dollar rate is actually a little bit smaller for the economy of scale we have. Smaller jobs, 300-400 cows would be maybe getting $1.50 per milk solid. So it's a fixed fee. It's a model based on backing your skills that you can get the cows and farm to produce. And then another model is a lower order share milking, or a variable order share milking, which is a varies from 21 to 25% of the milk check. But you need to buy tractors and stuff for that. With a contract, you only buy your motorbikes, you supply the labor for the farm and the rubber wear in the cow shed, and you pay for the power for the whole farm.
Okay.
Lower order does all that, plus pays tractor and machinery and 25% of the feed bill as well.
Okay.
And then you move then to share milk, share farming. Yeah, share farmers, share milkers, both the same. I've got to watch my PC here. you then buy the herd for share milking. So you own the cows, the machinery, plus all them contract milking costs, power, labour, motorbikes, all that stuff. And then that can vary in percentages as well. So, you know, if you buy 50% of the herd, you still only get 25% of the milk check because they view the herd as one half and the land as the other half. So that's the models, I guess, over here. And then there's a few things happening around equity partnerships now with people buying 10% of a farm, but also contract milking for that equity partnership that they own.
Mm.
So that's a growth model that people are looking at now.
Yeah, okay. It always seems to be, it doesn't always seem to be, it is. It's a very fluid system over there, isn't it? You know, you see people and they'll be on a farm for perhaps 2 or 3 years and then they'll move to another farm to keep moving up the ladder. Whereas I don't know if that, well, it isn't quite the same here, is it? You know, people tend to stay in one place for longer.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's definitely fluid, yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I think that, like, to me, it's a good thing because that shows progression and growth.
Yeah. Interesting. So, what's your, you're sort of obviously quite settled there at the moment, but where in sort of 5 years, I guess you can't say now, but, you know, long term, I suppose, will you be 5 years, 10 years? Are you likely to be somewhere else, or are you sort of fairly settled there for the short term future?
We're actually on our last year of contract here. So next season, June the 1st, is actually a changeover date. Everyone changes farms on that day. So yeah, we've got a new job come June the 1st. We've secured a share milking job. So we're buying 700 cows and we're going to contract milk another 550 cows for the same farm owner.
Okay.
With the goal of owning that other 550 within 2 years. So it'll be the 1,250 cow operation on two farms kind of thing.
So is that a big move, or will you still be in the same area?
20 minutes down the road, yeah, okay. In Tirau. Yeah, okay. Still in the Waikato, yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So you've talked quite a lot about some of the people that have helped you along the way. And I know you're very big on empowering other people and lifting them up as well. Why is that important to you?
I guess it goes back to Muldowney, Brendan over in Scotland. And I did a lot of reading when I was there, and he put me in a good headspace around the being a student of learning all your life. And so I'd read Nuffields, all that stuff, and a lot of the messages came back as, oh yeah, look after your people. And a lot of the same kind of wavelength around people, you know, cows and grass are easy, people are the hard part. So those kind of things came through and I was like, oh yeah, okay. So I started focusing from that 2012 on people and being able to engage people and start creating cultures and stuff like that. From then, pretty much understanding that you can train most people to do cows and grass, but you need the skill to be able to train them and manage people and have leadership and stuff like that. So, yeah, that started about then, and that was I loved that part in my life of how my mind had expanded to be able to look and research and learn about all these things. And it's become more and more and more important for me as I've gone through my career, I think.
Yeah.
And has bolstered me better and better as I've gone on as well.
Yeah, okay. So,
and I guess then in that 2015-16 era, I was like, I was so focused on people. It sounds kind of weird, but I feel like the North Wales dairy industry wasn't ready for that. They were in the hard work converting kind of phase where I wanted to be a little bit further down the, but what about looking after these people while we're doing? So I guess I was on a different page to where the industry was in that era, and I probably helped to make sure that I did that move to New Zealand, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Work-life balance. We talk a lot about that now in farming. It seems to be something that we talk about a lot in the UK, especially in the sort of younger generation of farmers. You know, you've got a young family. You obviously focus on being efficient and having a good system, not only for obvious business reasons, but also to allow you to spend time with the family as well. And I do think, again, you probably have a better attitude towards that in New Zealand than we do in the UK. Is that fair?
Probably a fair comment to a degree. There's still a lot of people that are, I'd call them workaholics. they work harder than me anyway. But that's not very hard either. I don't work very hard. I really focus on it from a wellness and mental health point of view. And even like to the degree that my parents split up when I was 3 years old, that's probably had a little bit of scarring or effect on my life.
Yeah.
And that has been a big part for me in making sure I look after my marriage and my kids. So doing the right thing by our families and going for lake days and going water skiing and going to the beach and stuff like that, that is really important for that balance, to make sure my marriage lasts, because what is life without a partner to live through, kind of, and like the effect it has had on me as a young fella, and all the farming families that were around me when I was growing up, I was probably pretty jealous of the life they led, you know, or perceived life that they led. It doesn't matter. It's still what it is in my mind. That they had a great upbringing. They had a great life. And I thought they had money. Maybe they didn't, but it doesn't matter. It's formed my opinion already of what I wanted my life to be like. Very important having that balance.
My wife's family, her parents split up when she was very young as well, and I would say she has very similar opinion. You know, she very, very similar experience to you in that regard. You know, she's very big on us spending time together, and which, to be fair, I suppose I am as well, but it always sort of focuses my mind, you know, when I get very busy at certain times of year. You know, she'll say, come on, you know, you need to spend some time you know, with me and the kids, and you know, and it just sort of keeps me on the straight and narrow. So
there's nobody on the gravestone says he was a bloody hard worker, is there?
No
there's that poem, Remember the Dash, and all that stuff. Like, what is life about at the end of the day?
Exactly You do seem to have a similar attitude towards your family. You've got a young family. I've got a young family, and giving them that sort of priceless farm upbringing as I do, is that something that motivates you as well? You know, that was always a big motivator for me for staying in farming, because I always knew I wanted children and I wanted them to grow up on a farm. You know, it was really important to me.
Yeah, 100%, definitely, especially. it has a bit of a princess. It doesn't like to come out that much, but he'll come on, cups off in the rotary and shout at the cows to back up Cheeky. Whereas Hadley, he's a bit more of a lad, and he knows tractors and cows and stuff like that. 18 months now, so yeah, I guess the next couple of years are going to be really cool as they understand more, and I can take them out a lot more and stuff like that. It's going to be cool. Can't wait.
Definitely.
And we're buying our first tractor in June, so that'll be even more cool that it's our own tractor that I'd be coming for rides with Dad with and stuff like that. It's going to be cool.
Definitely. What tractor are you going for?
Massey. Massey, man.
Good man. Good man.
Get money, you see.
Good man. you've got to be a massive man in North Wales, haven't you? There are one or two blue weirdos, but most of us are massive men. You've won a few awards down there, which, you know, are a big deal, you know, for anyone really and their family. What have they meant to you?
Yeah. It was out of this world. That point in our lives, 2019, it was bloody amazing. We were driven. We knew what we wanted. We'd done plans for 10 years and demonstrated what we were trying to achieve to the judges and stuff like that. So it was bloody amazing. And that to this day is still carrying us, and people know who we are and asking for our opinion and stuff like that. It's really weird. You know, we've only been in the country as such for, 5 years now?
Yeah.
And, you know, today I was at a Fonterra meeting, rubbing shoulders with a shareholders council. Yesterday we're actually regional managers in Waikato now for the Dairy Industry Awards. We were organising the judging yesterday, and all week this week the share farmers are getting judged, what we were doing 2 years ago, basically. Mm. So, yeah. So we won Waikato Share Farmer of the Year in 2019, and then when you win your region, you go on to nationals. So every region puts their share farmer forward to the national competition, and we got second in that, which is gut-wrenching, really, because you're not allowed to try again, so I'm going to have to live with second forever. But that week, I'll remember for the rest of my life. We did the day in the Beehive, which is kind of like the Kiwi version of Westminster as such. Got a tour around there, met a few MPs. What else? We had a Westpac dinner, so Richie McCaw was there for dinner. Awesome. Something I'm never going to forget as long as I live. Yeah, it was a hell of an experience.
Yeah, yeah. There seems to be very... Well, there is a positive attitude to awards in New Zealand. You know, they carry such a lot of sway, and people take them very seriously in terms of career development. Is that unanimous across the board? Because over here, you know, some people sort of, you know, some of the award winning farmers can get a bit of stick. You know, there's a bit of tall poppy syndrome. You know,
of course, yeah.
You know, does that happen
a little bit
as well?
Yeah, it does. 100% it does. But, like, my attitude towards it is, yes, you've got to be a good farmer, but also you've got to be a good ambassador for the industry. You need someone to be championing and being able to speak quite well in front of public. And so it's part of that development progress. You know, Jim Van Der Poel, he's the chairman of Dairy NZ now. He was on our trophy, you know. He won Waikato Share Farmer of the Year in 1993, I think. And look at the progression. He's running Dairy NZ Research now. Who else has been on there? There's some massive names on that trophy. And you're like, you see the progression and growth that they've had in their career. And it's all about them awards process. It's about that development, learning, growing and connecting, you know. Being a good ambassador for the industry is part of that, not just I get 10,000 litres out of my cow or whatever. It's about more than that, the persona, everything that comes with it.
Yeah.
So I've really enjoyed everything about it.
And
you're part of that family for a long, long time.
For sure. So what are your long-term ambitions? Is it farm ownership? Is that what you want to achieve ultimately?
Yes, yeah, 100%. Yeah, farm ownership. I want my own piece of dirt. definitely.
Yeah.
And probably might sound selfish, but I'd love to have a couple of farms. one in Wales and one in New Zealand.
Okay.
And have a business that is big enough that we can travel in between both, but that we don't have to be hands-on, that it is providing progression for young people. So having 50-50 share milkers on, or contract milkers or what have you, to allow people to grow with all the boats rising, a rising tide. I'm a big believer in that, you know. So why not help someone up the ladder, that like I've been helped kind of thing. So that would be the ultimate goal. So I'm head down, ass up, trying to achieve that at the moment.
Yeah. You've been there for a good few years now. Obviously been welcomed into the community, obviously very much a part of the community there. What are the best things about life in New Zealand, do you think? Is it the community, the weather? I mean, my wife and I went to New Zealand in 2006, and we just loved the people there, you know, great sense of humor, and you know, is that what it is?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's definitely about the people, the way of life, their attraction to water. They love going bloody water skiing and fishing. I love that.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to live my best Kiwi life at the moment, but I don't get to bloody go and fish as much as I'd like to. I'm probably focused on growing the business at the moment. But
yeah,
we still have lake days and stuff like that. And like, even going to the pub, it's just talking smack in the pub on a Friday afternoon, sometimes in between milkings. It's just the way of life, I guess. Yeah,
and I suppose you mentioned rugby earlier. Rugby in Wales and New Zealand, culturally very similar. I guess if you play rugby, you can pretty much go into any rugby club in the world, and you've got mates there already, haven't you?
Exactly. And that's how I've established in most communities I've been, is that rugby link, and building upon that. And yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And Wales and the All Blacks, obviously very similar standard of rugby.
Yeah.
Well, Wales is marginally behind New Zealand. Do you still support Wales in the rugby, or are you starting to support New Zealand?
Wales. And I probably do support. I've always supported the Kiwis a little bit until they play Wales. But I love their style of rugby and the love and passion they have for it. It's good.
Yeah.
Probably both of them.
Okay. Right. We will wrap this up with the traditional hard hitting questions, if you're ready. What is your all time favourite song?
Probably Biggie Smalls, Juicy.
That's an awesome choice. Wasn't expecting that from a Welsh boy. That's awesome. Really cool. Where's the love for that song come from?
Just the lyrics.
Yeah.
It was all I have Supreme World of Magazine.
That's awesome. Such a cool choice. Okay. Like me, you're a very big reader, read a lot of books. What's the best book you've ever read?
How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie.
Yeah.
Probably my favorite book. I've read that about 20 times.
Classic. Okay. You've been on quite the journey over the last few decades. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
What's the best advice? My mum has pretty good advice about gratitude. And I probably say it quite often to myself and my wife. What does she say? How does it go? I once complained I had no shoes until I saw the man that had no feet. So probably best bit of advice that I've had about gratitude is there's always someone worse off than you, kind of thing. Being thankful for everything that I have, yeah.
That's really good. I like that a lot. Okay, what do you miss the most about Wales? Apart from the weather, obviously.
What do I miss? One big one, probably like a big bank holiday in Bitter that starts off at lunchtime in the stables in Bitters of Coed and jump on a bus and end up wherever on a bank holiday with my mates. That's probably one of my favourite memories from home, and probably finishing with like a curry and chips all over my shirt. They just don't get the gist over here. You have curry on your chips? Dogs, man.
Lastly then, what is your favourite agriculture-related social media account to follow and why?
This varies from time to time because, like, people go on and off and... Like, at the moment, Bart van der Veen, I don't know if you guys follow him over there. He's a funny bastard, man.
He's a superstar, isn't he? Right. Yeah.
He's real funny. But I guess that's... I play pretty quiet on Twitter, but he's hilarious, man. But it gets pretty serious on Twitter and quite dreary at times. And so I'm like, I just stay quiet in the background, and then Bart just... you know, ignites your day in on a morning talking about doing the dishes and all that shit.
Yeah, he is a superstar, isn't he? Okay. Mark, it's been so good to speak to you. Thanks for taking the time. Congrats for everything you've achieved. And I really hope one day we can get back to New Zealand. And if it's okay, we'll come and see you. We'll bring some Welsh cakes with us.
I was hoping that you were going to say bring some Welsh rain. We're absolutely really dry at the moment. We're going through a drought. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll do our best. Rain and flood water does seem to follow me around, so I will do my best to bring some with you. Cheers, Mark. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening and hope to see you next time. I've been Will Evans. This has been Rock and Roll Farming. Thank you and good night.